Good evening. I've determined that a quorum is present, and I hereby call this special town meeting to order. I'd like to begin tonight with a moment of silence to honor Jane and Kenneth Young, who were killed on Sunday while vacationing in the Virgin Islands. Mrs. Young was a well-loved member of the LS Math Department for 17 years. For LS students, counseling services will be offered through the houses and the Career Center tomorrow. Counselors are prepared to support all students as needed. Superintendent Wong has informed the LS community that students and parents should not hesitate to contact her, the housemasters, or any other school staff if there are concerns about any student's well-being as a result of this awful news. My name is Michael Fee. It is my privilege to serve as moderator of tonight's special town meeting, as well as the continuation of our annual town meeting, which will commence immediately upon dissolution of this special town meeting. When introducing town officials and staff last night, I neglected to mention Selectman-elect Susan Giuliano, whose term will commence immediately upon the conclusion of annual town meeting. Susan, are you here? Thank you very much for your willingness to serve the town. Before we get started, I have a few announcements. For those of you who were not here last night, the fire exits are located at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as behind me through the stage. I'd like to thank Boy Scout Troop 60 and its members Ethan Mossy and Chris Rotundo, who will serve as our microphone runners this evening, as well as Girl Scout Troop 66247, Hannah Araghini, Emily Greeley, Caroline Davis, and Perrine Delisle. Refreshments are in the usual spot. 7th grade troop 66247 are raising funds for their Silver Award project, and they are working with Framingham's Head Start program to mentor students and create a lending library. All of the baked goods are homemade. So check it out. The Board of Selectmen and Town Manager remind you that the annual roadside cleanup will take place this Saturday, May 9th. The process will be slightly different this year, so please review the information on the final page of the warrant as well as on the town's website. The town clerk has asked me to remind you that a special town election has been called for Tuesday, May 19th. There are 5 ballot questions, and the specimen ballot for this election, as well as the information on absentee ballots, polling hours, and locations, can be found at the town's website, www.sudbury.ma.us, under the tab Recent News. Finally, I want to thank all of those who reached out to me with constructive criticism on my debut as moderator at last night's annual town meeting. As a result of that feedback, I have resolved to consistently speak into the microphone, to consult with town council before announcing the quantum of vote necessary for any motion, and to make an immediate appointment to be fitted for a pair of progressive bifocal eyeglasses. No clapping. On to the special meeting. Many have asked, why are we having a special town meeting in the middle of an annual town meeting? Article 2, Section 1 of the town's bylaw states that the warrant for each annual town meeting shall be closed by January 31st, and no article can be taken up at town meeting unless it appears in the written warrant. In February of this year, the town issued bonds in connection with the Johnson Farm acquisition. The accounting documentation associated with the sale of those bonds is required to be approved by a town meeting vote no later than June 30th. The warrant for the annual meeting was already closed, so the selectmen issued a warrant for this special meeting to be held concurrently with the annual meeting in order to save time and money. Any questions on why we're having a special meeting? For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of this special meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to all residents. I ask Chairman Woodard for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the special meeting, the officer's return of service, and the individual articles of the special warrant.
So moved.
Is there a second? It's a majority vote. All in favor? All opposed? It passes unanimously. Thank you. When you checked in tonight, you should have gotten two cards. The pink one is for the special meeting that we're in right now. When we dissolve the special meeting, we will switch to the green card, which is for the annual meeting. When we're done with these cards, there's a place to recycle them in the lobby.
Anything else about the cards?
Okay. Okay, Article 1. Motion by Selectman Chuck Woodard. Yes.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard for a presentation.
Some of you may have watched the multiple public hearings the Board of Selectmen had with regard to an alcohol license application for Erica's Restaurant, which is to be the successor to Sierra's on Route 117 in North Sudbury. And Sierra's closed some time ago, and we have a past due bill for property taxes, interest, and penalties of about $40,000 on that property. And property is owned by Mr. Canizzaro, and the Erica's application was on behalf of his wife, Erica, and under the terms of the town's bylaw, we could not deny the alcohol license application, even though the taxes were past due, because the name on the application was different than the name on the property. Now, there was a lot of documentation behind the ownership of the property and control of the property and the ownership and control of the proposed licensee for the alcohol license. And we concluded in our first hearing that the economic interests of the property owner and the license applicant were the same, and we denied the license. So they came back again with another application, and the second time they came back, they said, all right, we'll agree to pay the taxes as a condition to pay taxes in full. They originally said they'd do a payment plan. We said no. They said, we'll pay taxes in full if you give us the license. So we agreed to issue the license subject to payment in full of all taxes and penalties with the cashier's check. But what all of this pointed out to us was there's a loophole in the town's bylaw that permitted this kind of situation in the first place. So the language of Article 1, and if there are questions, I'm going to defer to town council, but the intent of the language of Article 1 is to close the loophole so that if someone comes to us asking for an alcohol license to operate an establishment on a property that has past due property taxes, the past due property taxes would be a basis for denying the license, which gives us some leverage to collect property taxes, which is a good thing.
Thank you. Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 1.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen position?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 1? Okay. Could we get a mic to this woman here, and please? Name and address for the record, please.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I actually have a question. Does this only apply to things like liquor licenses, or does it apply to something that's bugged me for years, which is the ability of contractors to get permits for new developments when they owe property taxes?
I'm going to defer to town council.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Barbara St. Andre. I'm with Petrini & Associates, town council. Your bylaw applies not just to liquor license permits, but it applies to a great variety of permits, including building permits, subdivision permits, special permits. I couldn't even list them all.
I can see you're pleased by that answer. Any further discussion on Article 1? Yes, sir, in the back. Can we get this gentleman a mic in the back row?
Got it.
I think so.
Mr. Moderator, it's my question.
Can you please start with your name and address?
My name is William Cooper, 11 City Creek Road. First question relates to the wording of the article, and I want to know if there's a typo or an error in the first line where it says the licensing authority may deny, revoke, or suspend and license or permit. Should that word and, in fact, be any?
Yes, it should, and that's actually in the current bylaw. We're not changing that. So the typo doesn't matter. It should be any. You're right.
Okay. The second part of my question has to do with the situation where perhaps a business has been going along just fine. They have a lease with the property owner, but then for some reason or other, the property owner falls behind in his taxes, even though the business itself may be unrelated to the property owner. Is that business then going to be denied a license because the property owner has failed to pay his taxes?
We have the right to deny the license. We don't have to deny the license. I think we'd have to look at that situation.
Anyone else to be heard on Article 1? I see no one. Let's vote. This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? Passes unanimously. Passes nearly unanimously and well more than a majority. Hang on just a second, Chuck.
Yep, no hurry.
Okay. As I mentioned previously, Articles 2, 3, and 4 on the special meeting warrant pertain to bonds issued in connection with the Johnson Farm acquisition. The person most knowledgeable about those bonds is David M. Eisenthal, the Vice President of Unibank Fiscal Advisory Services, Inc., the firm that assists the town in planning and structuring its general obligation and revenue financing. Article 2, Section 6 provides that non-residents may not address town meeting without the consent of the hall. In order that voters have all pertinent information necessary to consider Articles 2, 3, and 4, I ask the Chairman Woodard for a motion authorizing Mr. Eisenthal, if recognized by the moderator, to address the hall to answer any questions on Articles 2, 3, and 4.
So moved.
Does that have a second? It does. Any discussion of that motion? Okay. All in favor? All opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you. Article 2. Mr. Woodard for a motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard for a presentation.
Thank you. I'm going to make actually one presentation to address Articles 2, 3, 4, and 5. Actually, and as the moderator pointed out, Articles 2, 3, and it all Articles 2, 3, and 5 are the result of the bond issuance, and I'll get to that in a second. Article 4 is actually the article that allows us to accept the private donations that were given as part of the Johnson Farm acquisition. So you may recall Johnson Farm was acquired with a combination of CPA funds, a debt exclusion, and private donations. In order to receive the private donations and reduce our borrowings, we need the approval of town meeting. So what's being requested? I think Article 2 is allocating. Actually, let me step back for a minute and just give a quick overview. When the bonds were sold, the broker, in order to sell the bonds, wanted to be able to market an above-average rate of interest on the bond. So the face value, if you look at your buy your bond and it's got on it, it says what the interest rate is. The broker wanted to be able to say, look, we've got an interest rate of, I'm going to use the example I'll get to in a minute, 3.5%, even though the market may be 3%. And when that happens, there's typically a premium paid for the bond because it has a higher market rate of, has a higher rate of interest, and it's that premium that's created all of the accounting issues, and that's why we're here tonight. So Article 2 is to allocate, Articles 2, 3, and 5 allocate the bond premium. Article 4 allocates the private donations in connection with Johnson Farm. So let me do some give a kind of a finance example here to explain what happened with the premium. So let's say we needed to raise $1,000, and the market rate of interest is 3%, and the broker wants to sell a bond that has a coupon, a face coupon of 3.5% for marketing reasons or whatever. You could do that, but what happens is the broker sells a bond with a face value of $857 and that coupon of 3.5%, and he sells it for $1,000. And by selling it for $1,000, Sudbury gets $1,000, and we have an effective cost of that $1,000 of 3%, because the 3.5% nominal coupon that we're paying on the $857 works out to an effective rate of interest of 3% on $1,000. So we're paying a market rate of interest. The bond has an above market rate of interest, and the way you put all that together is the buyers pay a premium to buy that piece of paper. The premium in this case, my example, is $143. And all of this we're talking about tonight is how to deal with $143. It's not so simple as just, if we just sold the bonds for $1,000, it'd be easy. You put the $1,000 bond on the books and you're finished. When you have a premium, you have two separate accounting transactions. You're recording the $857 bond. Separately, you're recording the $143 premium. So in the case of Article 2, we're requesting the transfer of $440,000 of premium received on the bonds issued in connection with the police station project. And so rather than having $7,200,000 of bonds, we issued $6,760,000 of bonds, and we're asking for permission to transfer the $440,000 of premium to the project. In Article 3, same kind of transaction. The amount we were trying to finance was $1,000,009. You need to reduce that by the $66,000 that we received in private donations. And then the premium was $110,000. So we actually issued $1,724,000 in bonds, and we have $110,000 in premium that we need your approval to apply to the project. Article 4 is very straightforward. We want to accept the gift of $66,000 from the private donors in connection with Johnson Farm. And Article 5, and this is the Nixon School project that the special town meeting approved late last year. In that case, the town issued $440,000 in bonds, and we have $60,000 in premium that we need your permission to apply to the project. And I'll take any questions.
I appreciate your consolidating those presentations, Mr. Woodard. On Article 2, Finance Committee report.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 2.
Mr. Woodard, what's the Board of Selectmen's position on Article 2?
The Board of Selectmen supports Article 2.
Discussion on Article 2. Anyone wish to be heard? I see no one. We'll proceed to a vote. A majority is required. All in favor of the motion under Article 2, please raise your cards. All opposed? Passes unanimously. Article 3. It wasn't, I'm sorry, I didn't see. If it was not unanimous, just I'll note that for the record. It was nearly unanimous and well more than a majority. Article 3, Mr. Woodard for a motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard?
No further comments beyond my original presentation.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 3.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Anyone wish to be heard on Article 3? I see no one. Majority vote is required. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? I'm going to say it's nearly unanimous and well more than a majority. Article 4. Mr. Woodard, for a motion.
Move to reduce the borrowing authorization for Johnson Farm by the amount of $66,000 accepted as a donation from the Sudbury Valley Trustees by the Board of Selectmen for the purchase of the Johnson Farm property.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard.
I just want to quickly point out that this is not a gift from the Sudbury Valley Trustees. The Sudbury Valley Trustees acted as the administrator of the program to raise private donations, and so they collected the gifts and consolidated them and sent us a check for $66,000.
Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 4.
Board of Selectmen position?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on the motion under Article 3? My apologies, Article 4. Anyone wish to be heard? I see no one. The vote is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? I think that's unanimous. Article 5. Mr. Woodard.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard.
No further comments beyond my original presentation.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 5.
Board of Selectmen position.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Who would like to be heard on Article 5? I'm sorry, are you raising your card, sir? This gentleman over here, are you raising your card?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anyone wish to be heard? Article 5. I see no one. Majority vote is required. All in favor of Article 5, please raise your hand. I raise your card. Thank you. All opposed? I think that's unanimous. Was there one? Okay. That was nearly unanimous, but well more than a majority. On to Article 6. Motion from the Planning Board. Craig Lizotte, Chairman of the Planning Board.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? It does. Mr. Lizotte.
The Planning Board has decided to indefinitely postpone this article. If Article 36 of the annual town meeting passes, the Planning Board will consider a similar bylaw amendment at the next town meeting, which may be somewhat more comprehensive. Due to the order of the articles, with this article being presented before Article 36 of the annual town meeting, we did not feel that it would be productive to advance this article at this time.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports indefinite postponement.
Would anyone like to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 6? I see no one. Majority vote is required. All in favor, please raise your hands, raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed? Nearly unanimous. Been well more than a majority. That takes us to the end of the special meeting agenda. I would entertain a motion to adjourn. I'm sorry, motion to dissolve the special meeting. Does that receive a second? It does. All in favor of dissolving the special meeting? All opposed? That's unanimous. Okay. Town Council informs me that we are automatically and magically back into the town meeting, annual town meeting that we left last night, and we're on Article 25, school classroom flooring replacement. Motion by Mr. Kelly. I'm sorry. Before you start, please retire your pink card and take out your green card. I'm also informed by the town clerk that we have a quorum for the annual meeting as well. Mr. Kelly, please proceed with the motion under Article 25. Yes. Please stand. I've already recognized Mr. Kelly for a motion under Article 25. Can you do it at the next, after Article 25 is finished? Mr. Wallach, can you tell me what your point of order is?
I would move that Article 54 and 55 be addressed and voted on before Article 25.
Okay, so you're making a motion to amend, a motion to take an article out of
that's
order,
sequence.
Is that correct?
That's okay. Correct, sir.
And have you delivered that motion to the technology administrator, Mr. Thompson?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and you've delivered it to me previously, and town council and I have reviewed that motion and determined it to be in order. Can you restate the motion, and can we put it up on the view graph?
Yes.
Can you restate it again, Mr. Wallach, please?
Yes. I move that Article 54 and 55 be addressed and voted on before Article 25. This is out of sequence as per the official town warrant.
Okay. Does that motion receive a second? Are you raising your hand?
May I give rationale, Mr.
Just,
Moderator?
Just a minute. I need to know that we have a second. Okay. It has a second. Would you like to proceed with the presentation on your motion?
Yes. The rail trail votes in the past have occurred at the last item, at the last day, usually at the end of the meeting. And the audience is a minimal audience. Very few people are here except the supporters of the articles. Since this amount of money is $1 million per article, and it's huge, it's not in the budget, and it's larger, and it's unplanned, and more expensive than many of the critical items before us now. For this much money, I believe we should strive to vote with maximum attendance, which is right now, instead of minimum attendance, at the very end of the meeting. I understand this will also be part of the town meeting vote that will occur in the future. And therefore, a discussion should occur with the widest audience possible. It will affect our taxes. It doesn't deal with any operational costs that may be associated with it. I did email the sponsor, Andrew Sullivan, and he had called me, and we had a conversation of what my intent was. Sir.
You're finished? Okay.
I'm finished.
Anyone wish to be heard on this motion to take Articles 54 and 55 out of order and consider them now? Mr. Coe, can we provide a microphone to Mr. Coe, please?
Mr. Moderator, I Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I don't have any argument, I suppose, with the proposition that we should have this vote on these two articles taken before a substantial attendance of the hall. But when you take articles out of order this way, you disadvantage the people that expected to have them taken up later and expected to attend when they were taken up. So given that there was no publicity, at least none that I saw, that suggested that this was going to come about, and it takes a very large majority of the hall to take articles out of order for a very good reason, because you expect to have the articles taken up and you expect to know what's going to be there if you show up on a particular night. So I would urge defeat of this motion.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion? Yes, sir. Can we get a mic to this gentleman right here, please? If you could just pass it in, it would be great.
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. I strongly agree with Mr. Coe's rationale. I am aware of a few people that planned on attending tomorrow night because they knew that these articles would be discussed, and therefore I'm strongly opposed to moving them out of order right now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Who else wants to be heard on the motion? Right here, Mr. Matthews.
I also agree with that opinion that this should be kept in the original order. I'm sorry, Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I agree with the premise that the article should be kept in the original order. And I would challenge the premise that Mr. Wallach has built his rationale around, is that it's highly speculative and one really can't predict the future and know what kind of attendance is going to be here at that time.
Thank you. Mr. Abrams.
Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. I'm also opposed to the motion. I'm opposed to it for a slightly different reason, because part of what Mr. Wallach says makes sense. part of what he says has to do with the fact that we have a history in our town meeting of packing the hall for certain special interests. They varied a lot in my 45 years in town. I first experienced it with hockey rinks. When we packed the town hall for hockey rinks, what was it, 1972, 1973, we had assistant moderators in the cafeteria, we had assistant moderators in the library, we had assistant moderators all over the building, because instead of the usual big crowd of 500 or 600, we had 1,700 people come out for that town meeting. It was a smaller building. What I proposed to do at one time in the past to stop packing the hall was to change our bylaws to have a random draw of town meeting articles so that you would get a warrant with 56 articles or whatever we have this year, but the moderator would draw a number out of the hat and that was the next article that you would hear. And in fact, many towns do this, and they do it for the particular reason of, to avoid packing the hall. If we want to avoid packing the hall in Sudbury, that's what we should look at. I tried to do it once before. I did not meet with any success. There was too much opposition to it, and I ended up not pursuing it. If you want to stop the problem of packing the hall, that's the way to stop the problem of packing the hall. Doing it this way is not the right way. I would vote against this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The question's been called. How many people have something that they want to say on this motion? I'm going to take this gentleman here. Can we get a mic to this gentleman right here? That needs to be on.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I don't think we should take these out of order, so I'm opposed to this motion. For most of the reasons that have already been stated, except for one, and that is if we are going to start a new era of respect in town meeting for other people, to take these out of order, I think, is to disrespect those people who plan on coming to vote for this. So although it might be stacking the hall, you know, in which, you know, most of us don't care for, they had an expectation, as was already stated, and I would prefer to, even though I am opposed to these articles, and it's probably not in my favor to, you know, take them when they were originally scheduled, I think to respect those people that had planned on coming, we should defeat this motion.
Thank you. Okay, the question has been called. Is there anyone that wants to speak in favor of the motion? Ma'am, in the back, all the way in the back, please.
Linda Cass, 7 Hayden Circle. I'm just wondering if there's a compromise here, which is announce when they're going to be called, perhaps tomorrow night, if that's when it is, so that you can have those people present who want to be without, you know, undermining the folks who planned on being here for another purpose.
Okay, thank you. Are we ready for a vote? Okay. All right, this motion requires a 4/5 majority in order to pass. All those in favor of the motion to take Articles 54 and 55 out of order, please signify by raising your green cards. All those opposed, the motion fails. On to Article 25. Mr. Kelly.
Move to transfer from free cash the sum of $100,000 to be expended under the direction of the Facilities Department for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to various classroom floors in the Sudbury Public Schools, and all expenses therewith, including professional and engineering, the preparation of plans, specifications, and bidding documents, and supervision of work.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kelly for a presentation.
So this is the finished product. This is what we've been doing the last couple of years at the Sudbury Public Schools during the summer, mostly at Noyes and Nixon. This year, we are requesting $100,000 to continue replacing some of the older, deteriorating floors, which are vinyl composition tile, as well as half of the classroom floor is carpeting. It's been a very successful plan. We have the capacity to do a certain number of rooms per summer. In fact, the contractor that has been working, a couple different contractors have done work, and they work in other cities and towns where they may try to do the whole building in one summer. You know, if you're not done when school opens up, it's really not a good place to be. So they said, you know, at Sudbury, you're probably doing a good thing. This is a picture of a classroom floor. We have over 600,000 square feet of floor space in our buildings in town. This carpet is actually the entire floor. Most of the floors in the classrooms are half carpet, half tile. I will say, just so you know, I mean, personally, in the summertime, the teachers will kind of peek in and see how the floors look in there. They're absolutely delighted to see that the old carpet is removed and a new floor is being put in place. And some teachers who are waiting their turn often say, you know, when are you going to get to my floor? So hopefully this summer. Just another picture of the finished floor. I just really want to point out the work that the men and women do, the custodians do, to take care of our buildings. They take a lot of pride in this, and they really appreciate that the town is willing to invest in these floors so that they can have a place where they can be proud of, make it comfortable, make it clean for the students and the teachers at the schools. Here's a before and after. If you were here last night, you know how I like these before and afters. We are actually put the bid out where we notified the state, so if town meeting approves the funding, we'll be opening bids May 29th. Hopefully we'll be able to start working June 30th, just as soon as the school year ends. Another view of, you know, a before and after, and these are some, this one particularly is some tile in a hallway area. And as I said before, I think it's a good plan. You can see we've been successful in the last few years. We want to continue that. We don't want to try to do the whole building all at one summer. I think we just simply can't do it. The staff can't handle that. We have to move all the furniture out. So I hope the town meeting will support this and that we can get going as soon as school year ends. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Finance Committee report.
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 25.
Board of Selectmen position, Mr. Hardy.
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee report, Mr. Travers.
The CIAC supports this article.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 25? Yes, sir. Right in the middle. Can we get this gentleman a mic, please?
Good evening. My name is Tim Hankins, French Road. Just a question. I missed last night, so I may have been some background on this that you went through, et cetera. Is this a one-time annual expense that is approved at every town meeting type thing to get these fundings to occur?
So this project is being funded by free cash. So it's not a capital exclusion. If that's what you're thinking, some other articles will be a one-time tax increase for 1 year, and then it'll go to a ballot question. This project is actually being funded because we have available free cash, so we're transferring the free cash to fund this work.
I'm going to also recognize Chairman Woodard to respond to that question.
Just in further answer to that question, we do not have a approved in advance annual expenditure for capital. Capital expenditures have to be approved individually each year by the voters, either at town meeting or if it requires debt at a ballot.
Thank you for that explanation. Just a follow-up. I guess I wonder in the future whether for these kinds of maintenance expenses there should be consideration by the selectmen of the finance committee to actually include those in the tax rates, or at least, you know, have them as part of the budget so that we don't go through these kinds of minutia relative to these kinds of meetings. Just a thought.
Thanks. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 25? I see no one. This vote requires a majority to pass because it's coming from free cash. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? Passes by well more than a majority. Article 26, school rooftop HVAC unit replacement. Mr. Kelly, for a motion.
Move to transfer from free cash the sum of $75,000 to be expended under the direction of the facilities director for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to the Sudbury Public Schools rooftop HVAC units.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. I didn't introduce myself last article. My name is Jim Kelly, Facilities Director. This is all language in the warrant. You've all, I'm sure, read it. This article is requesting $75,000 to replace either a rooftop unit at the Loring School or the Peter Noyes School, not both. These are cooling systems on top of our roofs. The reason why, similar to previous article, why we didn't request both units is simply trying to balance the competition for capital dollars. We think this is a good plan, and we're going to make the decision on which unit is most critical come probably pretty soon, the way things are going right now with the weather. These are just a couple shots of what the rooftop unit, a typical rooftop unit, looks like. It looks like one of your air conditioning compressors on the side of your house, but usually they're much bigger. Just in case you didn't know what one looked like, I thought that would be helpful. This is a shot of the Loring School. It was built 16 years ago. I pointed out where the rooftop unit that we're proposing to replace is located. It's over the library. And as you can see on the rooftop of Loring, there are several other larger heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. This is a smaller unit over the Peter Noyes. This one is for the administration. I noticed this picture when I was putting the PowerPoint together that this was either very recent but probably before the blizzard because most of that unit was covered over the winter. This unit, as well as one other, is estimated to cost $75,000 to replace. And here is a shot from the sky of Peter Noyes locating the two condensing units. It shows the location. But as I was kind of putting these slides together, I really, really saw that, and I thought, wow, that's a really cool picture. That's the Peter Noyes. That's the roof that we approved about 4 years ago or so. And I thought, I just thought it was kind of nice to talk to town meeting and say, you know, we never look back. You know, we're working on a lot of capital articles this tonight, last night, and we don't really come back and say, you know, this is what we did. We may do that in a smaller school committee or a selectmen's committee, but I just think it's kind of nice to say, yeah, you know, we really made this improvement a few years ago, and I can say that this roof has just been fabulous. So I just a little kind of off the subject, but I just thought I liked it, and I think
can you get back on the subject, please?
So here's just a few more shots. The one on the left is Peter Noyes again, and on the right is a unit that serves the gymnasium at the Fairbank Center. I just wanted to recognize a couple people that do a lot of work on these units and not easy to get to. That's Joe Kay from the Sudbury Public Schools and Art Richard from the town of Sudbury. They're the ones who have to crawl through that snow and go up on those roofs on the 90 degrees days to make sure that they are well maintained, and they do a great job. And two more shots of rooftop units. I figured while we're talking about them, you could see that architects try to hide these units. They tuck them in little areas where you can't see them. And as the slide says, it's probably one of the only good things a flat roof is for. It's a good location to put a rooftop unit. And then finally, just to appreciate the need, there's a list of how many of these systems are on our buildings. That's how buildings are heated and cooled. And some of our buildings, as I mentioned before, are starting to get to a certain age where there's more and more repairs, and some will tend to be near replacement time. So we're there for these couple units this year. So I hope you support this article.
Thanks. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 26.
Board of Selectmen, Mr. Hardy?
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Travers.
The CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 26? I see no one. This vote requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? It's unanimous. Article 27, DPW rolling stock replacement. Bill Place, DPW Director, for a motion.
Move to transfer from free cash the sum of $311,300 for the purchase of rolling stock vehicles equipment for the Department of Public Works.
Is there a second? There is. Mr. Place for motion for a presentation.
For the record, my name is William Place, your Director of Public Works and Town Engineer. $311,300 is being requested tonight to replace one 2004 six-wheel dump truck, one 2010-wheel dump truck. The life expectancy of these vehicles was 7 to 10 years. At the time of replacement, these vehicles would be 11 to 15 years old. These vehicles are the town's main line of defense for snow fighting and are used in a daily operation of the DPW. Last year, the hall supported the purchase of 13 vehicles that had been backlogged for 2 years. This article will catch up with the backlog of vehicle replacements and will ensure the continued operation of our rolling stock and reduce maintenance costs. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 27 by a vote of 7 to 1.
Board of Selectmen, Mr. Simon.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee supports this article.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 27? Would anyone like to be heard on Article 27? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your card. All opposed? It passes nearly unanimously and by more than two-thirds. Okay. Thank you. All right. The fire chief gets the hives when we stand around too much, so if you could come and find seats. There are plenty of seats in the middle of the auditorium. I'd really appreciate it if you could move and find a seat. Okay, Article 28. Article 28, cutting field lighting. Motion by the Park and Rec Commissioner James Murata. Mr. Murata.
Good evening, Jim Murata, Chairman of the Park and Rec. Move to appropriate the sum of $300,000 to be expended under the direction of the town manager for the purpose of purchase and installation of lighting at Cutting Recreational Field, property located on Maynard Road and identified on the Town of Sudbury Assessor's Map EO6-0502, and all expenses in connection therewith, including design, engineering, preparation of plans, specifications, and bid documents, said sum to be raised by taxation and contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with GLC 5921C 1.5.
Does that receive a second? It does. Before we begin, Mr. Murata, gentlemen, can you please find a seat in the middle? There's plenty of seats here, I'm sure these people would be happy to allow you to slide by and find a seat. Hmm?
We're going to try to install some lighting at Cutting Field to better...
Just a minute, please.
Sorry.
If you're standing in the back, please come forward. There are plenty of seats in the middle of the auditorium. Everybody needs to sit down. Okay, Mr. Marotta, for a presentation on Article 28.
Sure. So we want to better utilize an underutilized town asset in Cutting Field by installing lighting. We've received an estimate from Musco of $300,000 to install 4 steel posts with lights. This will help address field shortages and enable proper management of existing fields elsewhere in town. So why the playing field shortage? Well, several years ago, I would say 4 or 5 years ago, there was increasing scheduling conflicts among user groups, some of which were contentious. User groups were, when I say user groups, I'm talking about the soccer, lacrosse, baseball, everybody that uses fields in towns. User groups were voicing field shortage and condition concerns. There's clear deterioration in field conditions. There's currently condition-related field closures in town. And it's been 10 years since field-related capital improvements have been made to the town. So in 2012, we asked Gale Engineering to update their athletic field needs assessment from 2003. And they confirmed the need that we thought was apparent and also confirmed that substandard field conditions exist. They, in their report, indicated that 28% of the Sudbury playing fields are below acceptable standards, and fields are scheduled at 118% of sustainable capacity. In addition, and this is a quote from the report, in addition, the town is lacking sufficient athletic field space to accommodate the existing amount of youth and adult sports programs that are active in the town. And there are several others, but I will spare you. So the commission reviewed the report, substantiated the need. We explored all possible solutions. We determined and reviewed all viable options, including in this review included review of engineering, permitting review, feasibility costs, town department and committee reviews. The commission held meetings with public input. We had, which was a public forum specifically for the cutting lights. And there were concerns raised by neighbors, but I think that this will go through a site plan modification, if that may not be the correct term, but we will open that and address concerns from the neighbors, and that was discussed at the forum. So in conclusion, there is a clear overuse of fields and need for additional field space. Letting Cutting Field would increase the utilization equivalent to that of a second field, at least during the week. And it would provide much-needed field space in high-demand seasons, spring and fall. Fall is not the lighting, sun sets early, and in the spring, fields aren't open. And this is not a luxury. This is a cost-effective solution, making better use of an existing underutilized town asset. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marotta. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends disapproval of this article by a vote of 1 in favor of approval, 6 for disapproval. Last night at town meeting, we discussed and passed an article to establish a stabilization fund for town-owned synthetic turf fields with $1. This article was introduced because no money has been put aside to replace turf fields when the surface deteriorates. Our Parks, Recreation, and Aquatics Director has stated that these fields have a life expectancy of 10 to 12 years. that once they go, there's no repair possible, and that the cost of replacing the cutting field's surface is estimated to be $400,000. Cutting field was opened in October of 2006 and therefore is close to the end of its life expectancy. Before spending money on lights for cutting field, the town needs to be sure we have the money to replace the synthetic surface on this field. Until the town is presented with a specific plan for funding replacement costs for cutting, voting to increase taxes for lights on this field seems premature. Therefore, the Finance Committee recommends disapproval of Article 28.
Mr. Hardy for the Board of Selectmen position.
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Travers.
The CIAC voted 3-2 to support this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 28? Yes, sir, right here. Mr. Stein.
Hi, Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. Concerning the cutting field, have you considered eliminating outside for-profit companies that use the cutting field? I'm aware of at least one outside for-profit company that uses the cutting field. We charge them a nominal fee, and so either eliminate the outside for-profit companies using these fields or substantially increasing the rental fee that we charge to help absorb future costs in replacement of the cutting fields.
Is that a question or a statement, Mr. Stein?
A question.
Okay. Mr. Murata, can you answer that?
I'm not aware that outside businesses or entities are dominating or you know, impinging on the fields. Is there a specific incident you'd like to...
Well, I know of at least one organization. It's a for-profit lacrosse organization that uses cutting fields.
Okay. Well, to the extent that we can fit in outside you know, entities and generate some revenue, and that revenue should be pretty close to market, I don't have a problem with that. I know we have a park and rec director that does a great job trying to manage the fields, and I've never heard that before. So something we could look into and see.
If we're concerned about wear and tear, why let outside
Mr. Stein.
Wear and tear.
Mr. Murata. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 28? Way in the back, all the way by the glass. Can we get a mic back to that gentleman?
Bob Morrison, 16 October Road. I'm curious about the expected operating costs of these lights. Were they to be installed? And how would they be controlled were they to be installed?
Are you able to answer that question?
Yes.
Okay, please.
There's a 25-year guarantee on the lights, including the bulbs. So there are no costs. It's all part of the guarantee. And in
Wait a minute. If you're going to speak, you need to speak into a mic so that we can all hear you. Do you have a clarification that you... Why don't we do this? Why don't you let him answer your question, and then if you have a follow-up, I'll recognize you again, okay?
I did hear about the electrical use, and yes, that there would be an electrical cost incurred, and we would that would be something that we would incorporate into the user fee, as they do at the existing turf fields in town, the community field.
Does that answer your question?
No. What is the projected amount of operating cost, and what would be the operating hours expected for these lights, and what would be the expected operating cost, and has that been included in the budgeting for the Parks and Rec?
That has not been included in the budget, but that cost would be negated by any income.
Okay, who else wants to be heard on Article 28?
Yes, also, sir, right? Excuse me.
You're not recognized anymore, sir.
The control question I had also. How would these?
I will come back to you. Just a minute, sir.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I'd be interested in seeing a diagram, a proposed design of this. In particular, I'm concerned in general throughout the town on the issue of light pollution. You know, our night sky is becoming an increasingly rare situation for us to view the stars and all of that. So one of the questions I believe is asked is operating hours. So that's one thing. And the other, what are the specific design of these lighting units to minimize light pollution?
Okay, I'll try to answer that. In terms of the specific hours, that will be determined in the site modification approval process. And there has been some discussion at the forum with neighbors, and there certainly will be a recognition that there needs to be reasonable hours with the lighting. So that is to be determined. And in terms of, I'm not an engineer, but I know that these lights are very focused and can be, so they minimize your concern relative to light pollution.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard? Mr. Wallach. You're next. Wait a second. Wait. Thank you. Wait a minute. Please speak your name and address into the mic. I'm sorry. Your mic's not working. Is there another mic available?
Now it's on.
Alan.
Had to see that coming.
Alan Wallach, 67 Thompson Drive. What are the consequences of not approving this proposal?
From what perspective? What?
From use of the park.
Okay.
From
Mr. Murata.
Safety.
From a field management perspective, all the fields are in a pool of fields in the town, and they need to be managed properly from a turf perspective, and that's not occurring right now. There's too much usage on the fields and the grass fields. They're deteriorating quickly. There's currently a closure. This closure is impacting the user groups, and that will become the norm. There's an increased propensity to play youth sports. Certain youth sports are growing, girls lacrosse, softball, and that's just the way it is. So we would try to manage it as best we could, but I would anticipate that there would be a continued shortage of fields. Beyond that, specifics, I don't know.
Okay, who else wants to be heard? Right here in the front. I'm sorry, you're next.
Hello, Bob Armour, 21 Brookside Farmland. I'd like to support this article. I think it is a very valuable asset. I fail to understand the logic that we wouldn't reinvest in this asset when the time comes to replace the turf. So I think the lighting is a very good idea to get more value out of an asset.
Okay. Can you pass the mic to this gentleman right here in the middle, green shirt?
Kurt Larson, 95 Water O. I just want to speak in favor of the FinCom's position on this article because they make a lot of sense. If we can't fund replacing the turf, why would we increase the usage of the turf and only incur a cost to have to replace it sooner than we have the money available to do so? Also, putting lights in there is going to increase our operating budget for the field. Unless we can compensate for that by increasing the user fees in the proportion of the utilities they're going to burn and in terms of the wear and tear they're going to put on that field, because every playing hour on the field consumes a certain portion of the life of that turf. Until we see a presentation that says how that's going to be paid for and how it's not going to be paid for out of the tax levy, I can't support this article.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard in favor of the article? Anybody wish to be heard in favor? Right here.
Could I address a comment?
It wasn't really a question.
Okay.
So, right down here.
Bobby Began, 25 Pine Street, and member of the Park and Rec Commission. And I think I can probably address what Jim was going to say, and I think somebody else, Bob Stein, may have mentioned. The turf fields can be played on 24/7, and it doesn't make a difference in its life whatsoever. It's the sun that will actually wear down the fields. So what you want to do is you want to get the maximum amount of usage out of that field as you can. And the way to do that is to add lighting. It's something that should have been done early on and unfortunately wasn't. And also, I think folks will drive by fields like Haskell and they'll say, oh, that looks beautiful, you know, green as can be. Just go out and walk it sometime. The whole area down Hudson Road right now up against the Babe Ruth baseball field is shut down. If you walk across it, you're going to notice that it's uneven, the turf's not growing, and we're going to end up with fields that are going to be unusable. So you just have to think about that. And the cost of having to take care of those fields as we go along is just going to increase.
Gentleman right here in the blue shirt.
John Cutting, 381 Minute Road. My name being Cutting, I'm a little disturbed to hear two nights in a row now that my life expectancy is coming to its end. But other than that, I am against this proposal. I'm in a butter. This proposal to provide night lighting at Cutting Field represents a departure from past town practice. Heretofore, lighting such as at Feely Field, Featherland, and Lincoln Sudbury have been discreetly located so as not to intrude on large numbers of private abutting residences. This one is the opposite, and it's right in the neighborhood's face. There will be more than 12 houses that will have direct line of sight to the field, not to mention other more buffered houses. Five of these houses are within 250 feet of the field. None of the other lighted fields in town remotely approach this kind of insensitive intrusion onto other people's property as this article proposes. According to the town of Sudbury Recreation Use Policy, quote, no events may begin before 8 a.m. or past dusk, comma, with the exception of lighted fields that may be scheduled up to 10 p.m. The way that reads is a game could start at 10 p.m. This kind of lighting permeates the air of a neighborhood. And it's not just a light invasion, it's also a sound invasion. Biggest objection I would say the neighborhood would have so far to the way the field has operated is at 8 a.m. every Sunday morning, we are invaded by what I'll charitably call the old bucks. And the old bucks show up and they scream for an hour and a half. Then they go down back, have a couple of beers, look at my field, which they think is a restroom, and just create a tremendous amount of noise. Now, when I met with three town officials to discuss where the new scoreboard should be located, my suggestion was right next to Route 27, facing the parking lot and the stands. I was informed having it right next to the road could be a distraction. Eventually, it ended up in a place where you couldn't see it from the field, from the stands anyway. But if the back of a 6-by-12-foot non-functioning scoreboard is a distraction to traffic, what is a fully lighted field only 12 to 14 feet from the edge of Route 27's pavement? That's right. The edge of the artificial turf is 12 to 14 feet from the edge of the road. That's not a distraction. That's a hazard. I'm sure you've all driven past these kind of these fields before at night, and you look at them. When you drive around the corner and you come up to this field, it's going to be practically in the middle of the road, and you're going to watch everything going on that field practically the whole time you're driving by it. A simple solution to this would be to light one of Lincoln Sudbury's fields. Not only are they isolated from abutters, there's vastly more parking, and the traffic safety issue goes away. Given that there are two adjacent fields there, they could probably light both for less money or for a construction saving by sharing common poles in between the two. So I hope town meeting will reject this new invasive plan for field lighting and defeat this article. Family just moved into their new home at 14 Arboretum Way. They've got a 5-year-old, they've got a 4-year-old, they've got a 3-month-year-old. Their house is approximately 200 feet from the field. Neither they nor the other dozen or so families that will have a direct line of sight should have their quality of life degraded like this so that somebody else can go out and play a game, especially when such a logical alternative for this exists at Lincoln Sudbury.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard in favor of the article? Gentleman right here.
Bob Lee, 38 Candy Hill Road. Sudbury Youth Soccer uses cutting as much as we can. We have kids out there pretty much every evening, with the exception of sometimes in the spring when we share it with girls lacrosse, and throughout the fall. This past spring, again, we made maximum use of cutting field because all other grass fields were closed for the first 2 weeks of the season. We were able to put 4 teams out there till about 6:30 at night in different shifts. Having lights there would have given us another hour, maybe an hour and a half max with our young players. We're currently using the community field here, which is jointly owned by the town and Lincoln Sudbury High School. We make use of that in the evening till 9:15 with our high school programs. We cut off the lights at that point at 9:30. We give them a chance to walk off the field. It's a long walk from the stadium field back up to the parking lot. So we respect the neighbors. We respect the town and the property. And we've asked that you consider this. When we come into the fall season, most of our teams can't practice for the last month of the season because we lose light by 5:30, and the coaches can't get there until the 5:30 start time. Having these lights would give us an extra hour, hour and a half for those teams to be able to practice to see their season out. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I would hope by now that the hall is starting to get a pretty good idea of the arguments pro and con for the article. Is there anyone else that wishes to be heard to add some new information or perspective for the hall? Yes, sir, over here.
Peter Salvador, Maynard Road. I would be voting in support of this motion. Some of those concerns are very valid, and I would just like to offer a counter thought on the safety concerns with respect to the light and the proximity to the field. I find it difficult to understand how it would be that much more of a distraction at night versus all day long. So I would see the safety concerns would probably be fairly similar if I was driving down the road 12 feet from a field that was filled with people playing on it, whether it was be lit or unlit. And I don't believe that there's a high propensity for accidents occurring there currently. I did want to just second the fact that after this last winter, there's an enormous field shortage. There were many youth groups who were postponed several weeks before they could gain access to a field, and that includes both youth and adult sports. There's a pretty good amount of adult teams that try to get access to fields. With respect to the cost, I participate in some activities where we do look for lighted fields. And Sudbury currently is, for instance, the rent at the high school. That is the most expensive field of probably the 10 that we shop around to look for. So the cost is already there, and it is and we do feel like we are paying a premium to begin with. But currently, most Sudbury youth adult programs are renting space down in Natick and Wayland and out in Marlboro. And there isn't, it just seems crazy to have such a wonderful field that could be utilized more frequently to just be sitting there because the sun goes down at 6:30 in the fall and the snow is still out on the ground. you know, as late as April. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I hope we're feeling very educated about this. Is there anybody else that has some new questions been called? Anybody else have some new information that they'd like to add to this? We're going to take one more right here.
Siobhan Hollinger, 55 Washington Drive. It's more of a question. Well, it is a question. Was there any consideration given to doing some private fundraising or request giving naming rights to something to offset the cost to the town?
There was. Naming rights and advertisement, they really don't generate much revenue. You can just look over at the AB lower tariffs for that. That rendered very little monies. The youth sports are stepping up. There's kind of a two-pronged approach in terms of addressing some of our field shortages, and Davis is the other piece, cutting, and they are stepping up in a big way at Davis.
Oh. Yes, please.
So if Davis fails, then will those funds be available that in that two-prong approach to then offset this if this passes?
Chuck Porter, for that. Can you answer that? If you can't, I'll try.
I think, well, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question.
Well, it's appropriation from free cash, right?
No, it's $200,000 donated by the sports leagues.
Okay.
We're talking about private donations. Could they be used to offset the cost of this? I'm sure they could, but it would take a vote of town meeting to accept the money. Maybe not.
Yeah, Jim, I think we're talking about the $200,000 donated by the sports league. So I think it would go back to the sports leagues whether they want to redirect those funds from Davis to this effort.
Okay, does that answer your question, Ms. Hollinger?
I'm not sure it does.
Okay. We're going to have to go with that. All right, the question's been called. Two-thirds majority. Does the call of the question receive a second? Two-thirds needs to pass a call of the question. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your card. All opposed? Passes by well more than the two-thirds majority required. We're on to a vote. This will require a majority in order to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 28, please signify by raising your cards. Out of order. All those opposed? Okay, the motion fails to gain a majority. What's your point of order? Sorry? I can't hear you. Please stand and speak into a mic.
It's borrowing. Doesn't it take two-thirds?
No. It's not borrowing. It's an appropriation. It's a free cash.
Taxation.
Taxation, no borrowing, Mr. Coe. Yeah. Okay, first of all, the motion failed.
Thank you.
So it's kind of a moot point as to whether or not it requires two-thirds or a majority, but it did not receive a majority to pass. All right, Article 29 is withdrawn. Article 30... Motion by Ms. Bilodeau, please.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Ms. Bilodeau for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This article was submitted as a housekeeping item by our former finance director. We do our best to estimate projects. However, if we overestimate and we have money left over, we need to come back to town meeting to revote that money to another project. Both of the projects that are listed in your warrant have been completed, and it's recommended that these amounts be revoted to the newer Nixon roof project. Some of this money for the project has been bonded, but not all of it, and this would help reduce our borrowing costs. Thank you.
So is there a second on this? Finance Committee report, please.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 30.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Okay, discussion. Who would like to be heard under Article 30? Anyone? I see no one. The vote required for this passage of this motion is a majority. All those in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? It passes by well more than a majority. Okay. I am informed that it is past the bedtime of some of our Boy and Girl Scout assistants, and we're losing some of them, but we have live mics in the front of the hall, and I may ask some of you that are in that vicinity to proceed to those mics at some point during debate. I see there are some newcomers. There's some prime real estate right down here in front. I would like you to come and occupy it. That way, I'm sure to see your cards when you vote. Okay. Please have a seat. Okay, Article 31. Ms. Bilodeau for a motion?
Certainly. Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? There is. Ms. Bilodeau for a presentation on the motion to indefinitely postpone.
Okay. Similar to Article 30, this was submitted as a housekeeping item. Most of these items that are listed in the article have already been revoted to Articles 19, which was for the cardiac monitors, and Article 20 for the carpet replacement. The three remaining articles can't be revoted at this town meeting, so basically there's nothing left to vote on.
Okay, Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends indefinite postponement of this article.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports the indefinite postponement.
Anyone wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. We proceed to a vote. Majority vote is required. All those in favor of indefinite postponement, raise your card. All opposed? The motion passes unanimously. 32, withdrawn. 33, post-employment health insurance trust funding motion by Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Moving the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? Mr. O'Brien for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Larry O'Brien, Board of Selectmen. Last night we heard much discussion about our obligations to the OPEB, other post-employment
Wait
benefits.
Excuse me, Mr. O'Brien. Just let me confer with Town Council for a minute about your motion.
I thought it was a motion. Can you go back to the motion?
Yeah, we have a motion.
Here.
Would you like me to read? I got it here on the iPad.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's start over. Article 33, post-employment health insurance trust funding. Mr. O'Brien for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to appropriate the sum of $4,500,000 to be placed in the post-employment health insurance liability fund, the so-called other post-employment benefits, OPEB, trust established by the Town of Sudbury pursuant to Chapter 72 of the Acts of 2006, and to meet this appropriation by transfer of $4,500,000 from the Health Claims Trust Fund established by the town as of January 1st, 1994.
Does that have a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien for presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. As I began to say, as we heard last night from both the Chairman of the Board of Selectmen and the Chairwoman of the Finance Committee, we have an obligation to fund our other post-employment benefits. These are benefits that we provide to our town employees, teachers, et cetera, in the form of benefits outside of pension. This is an obligation that has, for years and years, by many communities, virtually all communities across the Commonwealth, gone unfunded and is paid for out of the yearly operating budget. In terms of what the audit firms are expecting going forward, as they would like to see funding put towards these obligations. We have previously established, as detailed in the motion, a trust fund that was approved by the legislature, and we have put some funding into that as we have made new hires going forward for the last few years. The $4,500,000 is the result of leftover funds from our health insurance program when we were self-insured. That program ended 3 years ago when the Board of Selectmen opted to take advantage of the change in legislation that allowed us to adopt the Group Insurance Commission program that is offered that has resulted in tremendous savings. Those savings have primarily been the generator of the free cash that we have used at last year's town meeting and this year's town meeting to fund some of these various items that you've been voting on over the last evening and this evening. This $4,500,000 is the result of the last 2 years paying out claims that have come in, return of premiums to town employees. We are going to hold over approximately $180,000 that will remain for any lingering claims. The $4,500,000 will act as a significant deposit to increase the levels in the trust fund, and it's part of a three-pronged approach. Last night you heard about how we're looking to begin funding as part of our operating budget and to ramp that up over the next few years. I'll be speaking on the next article about another way to generate some year-to-year funding into the trust fund, and we ask for your support for this one-time contribution of funds that are coming from health insurance, and we feel that it's a logical progression to move it over into providing benefits for our town employees going forward in their retirement years. We ask
Thank
for
you.
Your support. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends support for Article 33.
Board of Selectmen.
Unanimously supports.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 33? Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 33? If you're raising your card and I don't see you, just yell. Oh, okay, right here. Sir. wait for a mic. Wait for a mic. Turn it on.
Tim Hankins, French Road. What is the outstanding, in essence, liability that exists for this, in essence, account?
The liability for the OPEB, do we have that slide, Mark? We do have a slide to that effect. When you... So, yes, that'll work. So we break it down into two accounts because Lincoln Sudbury is a standalone entity and part of their liability falls on Lincoln, of course. And then we have town and SPS employees. This chart up here basically shows two options, pay-as-you-go or pre-funded. Pay-as-you-go, you can see the active employees and the accrued liability of $23 million if we continue to go on a pay-as-you-go basis. If we were to use an estimated 7.5% interest rate, it drops down to $12 million for Lincoln Sudbury and from $36 million as pay-as-you-go for the town and SPS to $19 on the pre-funded. And essentially as we try to get up to pre-funded, you know, we'll be in a hybrid mode in between over the next couple of years between this deposit and the proposal is going to be brought forth in the next article.
So it is the intent of the selectmen to continue funding this? Or would this $4.5 million, in essence, allow the town to suspend its contributions for a period of time?
Repeat the question, please.
What I'm asking is, by putting $4.5 million, other than what's called, I guess, the normal cost or whatever you want to call it here, are we, in essence, in some way changing the funding flow over a period of time?
Yes. We're going from virtually no funding, except for what we've contributed over the last few years for new employees, to looking to move into what we're calling normal funding, which would be part of the operating budget, and every year there would be an immediate transfer as part of the budget vote in the early articles of town meeting, to transfer money from the budget into the trust fund to then be used to start to pay out benefits as employees.
Were there any discussions?
Wait a minute, sir, how this works is you direct your question to the moderator and I will direct that question to whomever is appropriate to answer it. cross-examination is not really proper at town meeting, so if you could ask me your question, we can go from there. This is your third question, so can we have that, and we'll move on to other people that might want to.
It's my last question, okay. I promise.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, what's your name again?
My name.
No, I have to address him.
Michael Fee. I'm the moderator.
I'm sorry?
My name is Michael Fee.
Michael Fee, Mr. Fee, thank you. The question I have for the gentleman at the podium is, were there other discussions relative to how to use this $4.5 million? For example, this is for employee benefit programs that are not pension, as I understand it. We also have a pension liability that has significant underfunding. Were there discussions about applying that $4.5 million to pay the pension liabilities?
Do you understand the question, Mr. O'Brien?
I do, Mr. Fee.
Please answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bit of a ping pong ball. There was discussion by the OPEB Liability Committee. We did not spend a significant amount of time looking at pension because while it is underfunded, and there are people here more qualified than I to address the Middlesex Retirement Fund, teachers are funded by the state through their pensions, so that's one part of the formula. Town employees are funded through the Middlesex Retirement Board and contributions made each year to that, and they tend to adjust their projections up and down based on how the economy goes. And we essentially had, as you can see, a large liability with no significant funding, and we felt that since these were health insurance dollars originally, it was best to go towards health insurance liabilities that we have for retirees, which typically would be, for those of us not in the public sector, the Medicare supplement type plans that are provided by the town to retirees.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard? Anyone else have a question on Article 33? I see no one. The vote required is a majority. All in favor of the motion under Article 33, please raise your cards. All opposed? The motion passes by well more than a majority. Article 34. Mr. O'Brien for a motion.
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The Article 34, Special Act Dedication of Local Meals Tax Revenue to Other Post-Employment Benefits. Move to authorize the Board of Selectmen to petition the Great and General Court for special legislation which would allow the revenue received each year derived from the local meals tax to be placed in the Other Post-Employment Benefits Trust Fund established by a special act for the town of Sudbury, Chapter 72 of the 2006 Acts and Resolves, and would further authorize town meeting by majority vote to rescind the special legislation, providing that the general court may make clerical or editorial changes of form only to the bill unless the Board of Selectmen approve amendments to the bill before enacted by the general court, and provided further that the Board of Selectmen be authorized to approve amendments which shall be within the scope of the general public objectives of the petition.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. What we are looking to do is the third prong of our approach to address the OPEB liability is to create a limited but steady flow of dollars year in and year out to the OPEB trust fund. The source of this revenue would be the meals tax that this body enacted a few years back, and it represents, if you look on page 21 of your warrant, approximately $218,000 per year. And I think the last sentence of the Board of Selectmen's report is probably a very good summation, and that is that this would allow us to develop a disciplined approach to setting aside some portion of revenues, and that would be a good start. And essentially to allow that to happen, we need the permission of the Great and General Court, or more commonly, as we would refer to it, Beacon Hill or the legislature. And this is your vote tonight in support of this would allow us to petition the court and ask them to petition the legislature and allow us to redirect these revenues into the OPEB account. This does not by any means address the entire liability. It does take some of the burden off of the normal funding that we would be looking to establish year in going forward as part of our yearly budgets, and it would show our auditors and credit rating firms that we are attempting to make an annual contribution to the fund, and we ask for your support of this article.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee unanimously disapproves this article, recommends disapproval of this article. The Finance Committee agrees that we, the town, must address the issue of our unfunded OPEB liability, but we recommend disapproval of Article 34 at this time. We have just voted to put $4.5 million in the Post-Employment Health Insurance Liability Fund, a good start, and we have begun the process of including the OPEB normal cost in each cost center's budget. In FY17, the cost centers each need to add another one-third of the normal cost of OPEB to their budgets. Given that we have voted an FY16 budget that will use up any excess levy, the cost centers will have a difficult time preparing an FY17 budget that does not cut services. This, we believe, is not the time to remove approximately $200,000 in revenue from the money available for the FY17 budget. Therefore, the Finance Committee recommends disapproval of this article.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports the article.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard under Article 34? Gentleman in the middle here. Do we have a mic available to...
Send one across, Kevin.
Turn it on, please.
Adrian Sheldon, Mill Pond Road. I have a question and one comment. The question is, what happens to the current revenue generated from this meals tax? Where does that go? And my comment is that although OPEB is a worthy cause, and you know there is some financial prudence to this. My opinion is there are better ways to direct that money, specifically to the schools. One of the reasons why we have such value in our houses, and Sudbury is a great place, is the quality of our school system. Whether or not we have kids in our schools at this time, everyone benefits from the good schools. And it seems like in past years, past town meetings, it's been cut. And this year, hallelujah, it's level services, which really isn't advancing. It's just, you know, sticking our finger in the dike and keeping things where they are. So I have my question, and my comment is that I think the money could be used elsewhere.
Thank you. Mr. Bryan, can you handle that question?
I can, Mr. Fee. To answer the first question, the current revenue collected is paid quarterly by the Department of Revenue, comes into the town, and it goes into the general fund. And when the budget is established each year, it's just one of the many sources of revenue that are all combined together and then divvied up across the three cost centers. So I think that should address your first question. Second question was more of a statement. Being the beneficiary of fine schools in Sudbury for many years and having two children graduate this fine institution as well as SPS, there is no doubt that that is one of the primary drawing factors to being a resident of Sudbury. The OPEB liability remains, and while the board has wrestled with this for a few years and it will continue to be an issue, the board has discussed the fact that really only one community in the Commonwealth has addressed this head-on, and that was Wellesley, and they did bonding where each year they assessed themselves about $1 million to put into their OPEB account. Most other communities are doing nothing, or some of them have taken certain forms of revenue out of their general fund stream and put it into trust funds, and that was the approach that we were trying here to create some level of discipline. Obviously, more funding to the schools would do a lot more things. More funding to other town services would provide more services to people that would be looking for other delivery of other services. At the end of the day, it's $200,000 that we can keep in the general fund in an $88 million budget, or we can make a small token contribution towards OPEB and show the auditors and the credit rating agencies that we are attempting to address it. And that's what the board has proposed here tonight as an effort to continue addressing the OPEB.
Who else would like to be heard on the motion under Article 34? Yes, sir. Can you step up to the mic here? That would be perfect. Thank you.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. Is it such that once we vote this, it then forever has to go into OPEB, or are there some years when it can be used in the general town fund and some years when it can go into OPEB?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This approach would be a more disciplined approach because we are asking the legislature to ask for a direct, to allow Town of Sudbury to directly deposit this money into the account. So there would not be the option to vacillate from year to year or to deposit or not deposit. The alternative would be to have this discussion during the budget process each year and make the decision, you know, can we or can we not afford $200,000, $300,000, $50,000? At one of our selectmen meetings, one of the selectmen did say that, you know, this does create an element of discipline that any other approach would not have.
Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Where's the mic? Can we get the mic? There you go. Thanks, Jim.
I think it's voice activated.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I find myself confused. On one hand, I like the disciplined approach of putting the money in each year out of the meals tax. But then I haven't heard a suggestion yet from anyone, including the finance committee, that raised the objection about the pressure that this puts on SPS and Lincoln Sudbury. It seems like it's a temporary bind that we're putting them in if we do this. At least that's the way I interpret it. For next year's budget, it kind of puts them in a bind because they're kind of caught in the middle as this kind of establishes itself. I'd like to hear what the Finance Committee would recommend as a sort of a way to evolve to this point of disciplined funding.
Ms. Berry?
Thank you. We have not actually addressed that, I think, and we haven't. There are differences of opinion, I believe, on the Finance Committee, we didn't take a vote, so I can't tell you what the numbers are. I think there are some members on the Finance Committee who think of this as a temporary measure, that at some point it would be a good idea to vote, and there are others who don't think it's a good idea at all. So I don't know that we're going to be too helpful to you.
You want to speak to that?
If I could just add, in terms of impacts, beyond the fact that whatever the small percentile of $88 million is represented by $218,000, if you keep in mind that the general budget allocation is approximately 50% SPS and 25%, give or take a percentage point, between the town and LS, you can divide up the $218,000 and see the impacts of approximately $100,000 across SPS, $50,000 across the town, $50,000 across LS. So, yes, it's an impact. But again, it's a question of, do we apply some discipline and start to address this or not?
Okay. Any further questions or comments on Article 34? Right over here.
Oh, Mr. Moderator, what is the amount that would be needed?
Name and address, please.
Of Judy Deutsch, 41 Concord Road, Sudbury. What is the amount that would need to be paid into the OPEB account each year to have the amount, the total amount that's supposed to be there?
Mr. Woodard, do you have...
If we can go back to that slide that's got that.
Thank you for your question. We're going to get an answer to that.
So, good. Sorry. So, what again was the question?
The question, I believe, was how much would need to be paid to fully fund OPEB?
Yeah, if you each look at year. The if you look at this chart, three lines up from the bottom, you see something called ARC or annual required contribution, and that's the amount that the actuaries say we should be paying every year in order to deal with the current cost of the promises we're making today to our current employees and to begin to retire those large liabilities that are one line above it. So in the case of and we're currently paying as you pay. The difference between those two interest rates, again, by the way, pre-funded means you put up all the money today. So if you want to basically zero out the liability, in the case of Lincoln Sudbury, you put up $12,458,000 of cash, and that wipes out the liability. But if you're not willing to put up the cash up front, which can then earn a 7.5% rate of returns, you need to calculate your liability on a present value basis using a much lower interest rate. So... and that's where we are. So in the case of Lincoln Sudbury, the annual required contribution is $2,148,000. And in the case of the town, which includes Sudbury Public Schools, the amount is $3,359,000. So the total for the – and these are – and the Lincoln Sudbury numbers reflect our 85%. So the total for the town is close to $5.5 million a year. And I think we're currently putting up about $1.5 million a year. So we're pretty short, which is why – I think this recommendation is here to at least take a small step at closing the gap.
Okay, a motion's been made to call the question. Does that receive a second? It does. Two-thirds majority to call the question. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your card. All opposed? Okay, we're on to a vote. All those in favor of passage of the motion under Article 34, this requires a majority vote. Please raise your cards. All those opposed? Can I get that again, please? All those in favor? All those opposed? Oh, boy.
First for everything, Mr. Yeah. Moderator.
All right. Let's do a standing count. So all those who are in favor of the motion, please stand up. Hold your card. Okay, sit down. All those opposed, please stand and raise your card. Thank you.
The motion fails. Article 35. Motion by Chuck Woodard.
Move to authorize the Board of Selectmen to petition the General Court for a special act amending Chapter 169 of the Acts of 2012 by deleting Section 8 in its entirety, providing that the General Court may make clerical or editorial changes of form only to the bill, unless the Board of Selectmen approve amendments to the bill before enactment by the General Court, and provided further that the Board of Selectmen be authorized to approve amendments which shall be within the scope of the general public objectives of the petition. Said special act shall become effective upon Sudbury voter approval of the special act at either a regular or special town election.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard for a presentation.
Thank you. Just if I can go back to some remarks I made last night in my opening comments. This is part of our effort to try and keep our seniors in town. And as I've said many times, I'll say it again at the risk of repeating myself, the biggest budget challenge we face in Sudbury is the fact that we have the highest proportion of households with school-age children in the state. And the bottom line for that is we pay, all other things being equal, we pay to educate a lot more kids in a comparable community. So this act, as I mentioned, this act was passed in 2012. It was the result of a lot of work on the part of a small group of people in town carrying on the work of multiple committees over many years to try and come up a solution to this problem. How do we keep our seniors in town? And particularly, how do you keep someone who is on a fixed income and trying to deal with the high property taxes in Sudbury? And quite frankly, from the standpoint of the town, if we can figure out a way to do that, we're much better off if a senior, all other things being equal, elects to stay. Anything we can do to relieve their property taxes within reason is a much better deal than what we get if a family with small children moves in. I think I just went through this. So how exactly does this program work? It's fairly limited in scope. It's intended to deal with, again, families on modest fixed incomes where property taxes are basically a significant proportion of their income. In order to be in the program, you have to qualify for the circuit breaker state income tax credit. That is taxable income up to $55,000, and I won't read what's on the screen. More importantly, you have to be paying more than 10% of your income in property taxes. Age is a factor. Property assessed value is a factor. Property assessment can't be more than 10% above the average in town. And it's only available if you've lived in Sudbury for at least 10 years. So these are long-time residents, fixed incomes. We'd like them to stay. So what is the impact? What is the impact on us, the taxpayers, of having this program? And what is the impact on the applicants? An individual property tax bill, if you qualify, your individual property tax bill can be reduced by as much as 50%. And the question is, where does that come from? Does it come out of the operating budget? No, it actually comes out of our collective pockets in a very small way. The extent of the program is limited to between 0.5% and 1% of the total town levy, and the amount depends on obviously how many people apply, and the exact amount each year is set by the Board of Selectmen. And just to give you some history on this, over 100 households took advantage of this program in the last 2 years with an average impact on each of us, that is the shift to us from them in order to enable them to hopefully stay in their home. The average impact was to us was $45 each in 2014, $60 each in 2015.
So as it stands right now, the article was originally passed with a three-year time frame on it. It was intended to be a pilot program. In fact, it's been a very successful pilot program. That is, as I said, we've had 100 people take advantage of it. We've had inquiries from all over the state, from other towns, interested in understanding how do we figure out how to deal with this problem, which is it's not unique to Sudbury. So it was set up to just run for 3 years. It's going to expire in June 2016 unless we encourage the legislature to extend it. And we looked at really two options. We looked at asking for a six-year extension, and we looked at asking for a permanent extension. And we came down on the side of a permanent extension. And the reason we did that was we're trying to basically change behavior. We're trying to encourage someone who's looking at their finances, including their property tax bill. We're trying to encourage them to stay. And our feeling was that if you're going to convince them to stay, then you've got to convince them that their cost of living here is going to be at this lower level permanently, not just for another couple of years. Because just another couple of years, well, then really I may have to leave anyway, so I might as well start thinking about it now. So the specific request of the article is to ask the legislature to delete the expiration date in the Act. That's what Section 8 is. It's the expiration date. And if the legislature approves our request, then it would come back to Sudbury, and the voters would have a shot at it at the ballot box. So we're asking town meeting to approve, asking the legislature. Hopefully the legislature says yes, then it comes back and it goes to the ballot box. And then if the voters approve it, then it's effective.
Where's the Finance Committee on this?
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 35.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Excellent. Discussion? Who wants to be heard on Article 35? This woman over here right next to the Boy Scout. There you go.
Doris Goldthwaite, 141 Goodmans Hill Road. I'm a 72-year-old senior, lived in Sudbury for 16 years, and I'm in opposition to this article and this program. I believe there's not been significant public discussion of the reasons that this program has been and will continue to be detrimental to some senior citizens, including myself. I also want you to know that I'm generally a progressive voter and favor many laws and regulations to help those who have limited means. I simply do not believe that this proposed additional tax exemption is necessary in order to allow senior citizens of Sudbury to stay in their homes because of the number of other mechanisms that are already available for this purpose, including the real estate tax exemptions that we voted last night under Article 10. You may be aware that the following exemptions already exist. First, the exemption under Clause 41C of up to $2,000. Second, under Clause 17E, exemption of $586. Third, the opportunity to do volunteer work for the town on an annual basis in order to achieve further tax reductions of $750. In addition, the state circuit breaker income tax credit provides qualifying seniors up to an additional $1,200 per year. Finally, and I feel this is particularly germane, the town of Sudbury also has a tax deferral program that would allow any needy senior who did not receive sufficient relief from the just mentioned exemptions to defer property taxes until the property is sold. In addition to these state and local government supported remedies, the personal choice of obtaining a reverse mortgage provides a private remedy should a person whose finances are at a level that causes many people to choose to downsize their homes as their children grow or move out of a family home prefer instead to stay in this home. I certainly understand the desire to stay in one's longtime home and hope to do so myself. The problem for me is that this article is a financial disadvantage for me. I own a home valued at $428,500, which is at the 25th percentile of the home's valuation in Sudbury. My income level is just above the threshold that would make me eligible for this exemption. That means that I can be assessed or will be assessed and have been assessed an additional tax burden in order to support an exemption for residents who own homes, some of which are valued at up to $200,000 more than my own home. It just doesn't seem fair to me that a financially thrifty person such as myself, who has planned and purchased a home at a price I can afford, is now asked to support others who prefer to keep a house that is valued at up to 10% over the 50th percentile of assessed values of single-family homes in Sudbury, which is a 50% more expensive home than mine. Let's be honest about the fact that the size of our bank accounts and our homes makes up the estate of most Americans. I don't blame a homeowner who does not want to take out a reverse mortgage or participate in a tax deferral program, since it means that they would then have less of an estate to leave to their heirs. On the other hand, I myself, should I continue to live in Sudbury, would have less of an estate to leave to my own children, because I will be assessed each year a higher tax burden to help those who own homes that have a significantly higher assessed valuation than my own. I find this idea burdensome. I know it's not popular to risk being perceived as someone who opposes the needy elderly. However, I think that a true and fair examination of this article will reveal that some of those who will benefit are not as close to being the most needy in our state or even our town. I also want to consider the needs of those of a younger age who might lose their jobs, as has been too common in recent years, and families where a divorce changes their financial ability to remain in a home in Sudbury. My progressive values cause me to want to support laws and mechanisms that help those that are truly the most needy in our society, both within Sudbury and its bounds and beyond its bounds. Thank you for taking the time to consider these points, and I hope you will agree that any senior currently living in Sudbury already has the ability to continue to remain here in the community by taking personal responsibility to use the combination of public supports and private measures that should allow them to enjoy our beautiful town as long as they wish to remain.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 35? Right here, second row. You're next. It was not a question.
Mike Boulay, 27 Middle Road. I'm just wondering if there's any evidence of any of the people that received the benefit, that's made them actually stay. Anecdotal, any metrics, surveys, anything of that nature. I voted on this a couple of years ago whenever it came up, and I said yes, but I'd like to know what it's done.
Mr. Woodard?
I'm not sure. I'm looking at one of the co-authors over there. I'm wondering if we might give him the microphone. Would that be okay?
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane. We haven't done any more surveys. I know that as I talk to people, seniors around town, I've been embraced by many who thank me for this article and its passage because it has enabled them to stay in Sudbury. So I think there's that evidence that I've seen. This is a confidential program, so the assessors, somebody in the assessor's office is the only one that knows who is applied. We can't take surveys because we don't know who they are. And I think the other thing I'd like to say, if I may speak, other than to answer the question, Mr. Fee,
Why don't we get some more input? If you have a presentation that you'd like to make, I'll get back to you, but I'd like to sort of flesh out some of the questions from the audience before we deal with the presenter's perspective. Anybody over on this side want to be heard on this article? Right in the back with the red sweater.
Harold Cutler, 163 Langham Road. I'm curious if we could, in some way, if someone has thought about it, judge the potential negative impact if, say, 50% of these 118 people moved out of town and brought in families, sold their homes to families that might have one or two kids, which get educated at a cost of $8,000 or $10,000 per year. What's the impact of that extra cost on our taxes?
Any stats on that, Mr. Woodard?
I think the average cost of a student at SPS is about $13,000 or $14,000 a year, and the average cost of a student at the high school is $17,000 to $18,000 a year. So I think I figured out at one point that over the course of, say, educating two kids for a household, the town spends about $360,000.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Right here, sir. Mr. Williamson.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. I serve on the Community Center Task Force, and we had a forum where we looked at the what that task, that community center might be. The question is, what demand would there be among seniors for an expanded senior center? And I don't have the statistics here, but Deb Galloway made a very strong case that instead of the fraction of the town that are seniors going down, in fact, the fraction of the town that are senior citizens has gone up by a factor of two or three in recent years. I don't know if any of that has to do with this tax exemption. A lot of it has to do with the seniors-only housing. But clearly, something is keeping seniors in town.
Thank you. Okay, I'm looking in the middle. Anybody want to be heard here? Yes, sir, Rick. Let's see if we can't get you a mic. You might have two mics.
Hi, Charlie Russo, Juniper Road. I understand a large purpose of this is to sort of balance the seesaw. You know, right now the town has, you know, a high proportion of families with children, and it's to sort of balance the age of the population. But I guess my question is, if it's a very successful program and the seesaw swings the other way, even if it's, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, what's the process to unwind this, if that's ever thought to be necessary? Do we have to go back to the general court, or is it something that can be done locally?
I think we have to go back to the general court, don't we, Ralph?
Wait a minute, Ralph. Wait till you get a mic. So I'm going to recognize Ralph Tyler at this point to answer that question.
So it's my understanding the general court has this authority to enable the legislation, but we have the ability to then either adopt it or make amendments after we've adopted it. And one of the amendments could be not to have the program for a few years or to cease having the program. We don't need permission for that. But because this is something that the legislature controls, which is the taxation that goes through them, you can't do anything about taxation without their approval. It's that initial approval. So they have many programs they've created that are optional for towns to adopt, and it's then the choice of the town whether they adopt them. Some of the exemptions that one of the ladies mentioned that were available to various towns, those are things that the town of Sudbury has chosen to adopt and has chosen to multiply their impact. Some towns do, some towns don't, but that's the town's discretion. But it's the enabling that this article proposes. So the legislature only enabled 3 years, and now having successfully done 2 years going into the third fiscal year, the program will stop unless it's extended, and that's the purpose of this article.
Okay. Ma'am, right here in the front, the blue jacket. Ralph, can you do me a favor? Just hand that microphone to this woman standing.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes.
My name is Eva Fridman. I live at 25 Christopher Lane, and I've been living in Sudbury for 52 years. So I'm certainly a senior citizen. And I want to speak in favor of this particular article because I was here when we had all the discussions in the beginning about needing this kind of relief for people. And I believe in it firmly. I know there are many senior citizens who don't need this kind of relief, that live in Sudbury, but there are others who certainly, I think, would appreciate it and be able, it would facilitate their staying here. And I also believe in the original argument that was made when the article originally was proposed that, you know, you balance it off against what happens when a senior citizen, let's say a spouse has passed away, and so the senior citizen wants to move out of town because now they have the burden of paying all the taxes themselves. And then the house gets sold, and it's usually big enough so that there is a family moving in with school-age children. I see this on my street all the time. And I think that this is an important consideration financially, that actually we will, as a town, benefit from having senior citizens staying in town. And also the other aspect is having more of a diversity in the age of people and what they can contribute. Many senior citizens contribute a great deal to this town, too. So I think it's really important to pass this particular article. Thank you.
Okay, I thought I saw some. Okay, the gentleman in the red shirt standing. Yeah, right there. Hold on, let me get your mic. Thank you, Layla.
It's on. Graham Taylor, 221 Goodmans Hill Road. I'm a senior who barely does not qualify for this program. I have no problem paying another $45 or $60 a year to enable us to go on. I don't see any downside of this program at all.
Thank you, sir. How about right behind you, while the mic's in the vicinity?
Don Charles, Blueberry Hill Lane. I'm also very, very much in favor of this article. I just had a question. You described it as a pilot program. Does that mean that there are other towns that are adopting it as well?
I don't know that other towns have gotten approval from the state legislature to adopt it, but it was a pilot program in the sense that this was the first of its kind in the state of Massachusetts, and the state legislature viewed us as a pilot. And in fact, I think they're probably looking pretty closely at our success. And as I said, or I think I said earlier, many other towns in Massachusetts have called Sudbury to ask about the program because there's a lot of interest in being able to do this kind of thing. Every town in Massachusetts has budget challenges, and quite frankly, if you've got a tight budget, having a senior with no kids sell their house to a family with young kids doesn't help. And don't misunderstand. I have kids. They went through the school system. I love my kids, but it's unfortunately, it's part of our budget challenge. We've got a lot of them.
So
we're trying to manage the population of kids, if you want to get right down to it.
Okay, while we're back there, there's a gentleman with a baseball cap with his card raised. Layla, can we give him the mic?
I'll have. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sam Merrill, 111 Woodside Road. Having attended the meeting at the Grange when Representative Kaufman from Lexington came here, one thing, and this is to sort of amplify on pilot, they did not want to have a program that would be unique to Sudbury. They want a program that would be useful throughout the state, akin to the circuit breaker. So this program has been successful. As you saw, the number of people qualifying went up from 100 to 124, and part of the problem with the seniors is that many of them are still not aware of the availability of the program, and I think the town has to continue to reach out to those people. So Kaufman has already indicated, I think, some positive signs, and this is one of the reasons this is going to the legislature, and it could very well become a model for the state.
Okay, the question's been called. I'm going to take a couple more. In the back, gentleman on the end,
with the white shirt.
Carmen Gentile, 33 Surrey Lane, member of the Council on Aging, and a state representative from Sudbury. I did file a bill in the legislature to allow other cities and towns that chose to adopt a similar act, very similar to this, by local option. And Representative Kaufman, who is the, who was and continues to be the chairman of the Revenue Committee, Joint Revenue Committee on the House side, he's co-sponsored the bill. We've got almost 40 co-sponsors on both sides of the aisle. It's a very popular bill. I think I also sit on the Committee on Elder Affairs, and it has the support of members on that committee. I think what we've done in Sudbury is outstanding. It allows seniors to stay in their homes, and it saves us money. The $40 or $50 that we pay extra on our tax bill is offset by the $80 or $100 that we'd probably pay if we had a couple of children in many of these homes.
Okay.
So I urge support of this. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Stein, you've been waiting patiently.
Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. I have had a track record in the past of voting new taxes consistently, but in this particular case, I think it's simple math. There's 100 homes. If the 100 homes are unable to afford the tax, property tax, and move out, and a family comes in, and let's assume it's a 3-bedroom, a smaller home, and they have 2 children, if we simply do some math, 2 children times $15,000 is $3 million of additional cost to educate, and which would be an expense to the town. I believe the cost of this program is substantially less. So in my thinking, my track record of not liking to pay additional taxes, if we vote this down and those 100 people end up moving, and let's assume a young family comes in, it will be an additional $3 million cost to the town. So we will save money, a substantial amount of money, to continue this program.
Okay. I think we've had a fair sampling of opinion. The question has been called. If 2/3 of you are ready to vote, we can proceed in that fashion. But the call of the question, did that receive a second? It did. Okay. All those in favor of the call of the question, please raise your cards. All opposed? Okay, we're on to a vote. There's a majority vote required in order for the motion under Article 35 to pass. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? It passes by well more than a majority. 36. Town of Sudbury Bylaws, Article 5.3, Regulation of Dogs. Motion by Jody Kablak, Town Planner.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Good evening. I'm Jody Kablak, the Director of Planning.
Just a minute. If you could be quiet while exiting the hall, we'd like to continue with the business, but if you could please keep it down to a dull roar, that would be great. All right. Ms. Kablak for presentation.
Yes. Hi, I'm the Director of Planning and Community Development, and I'm speaking on this article on behalf of the Board of Selectmen. And I will just preface this by saying that I clearly drew the short straw on this article. Following my presentation, along with myself, there will be a few other people, the town clerk, the town council, and the animal control officer, who are available to answer questions. I think you'll also appreciate that this is moving the words of the article. We are not amending anything that is shown in your warrant on the 8 or so pages. Article 36 seeks to revise the current Sudbury bylaw regulating dogs in order to bring it into conformity with changes that were made to the state law, Mass General Laws Chapter 140, Sections 136A through 174D. It's a large law. These changes were enacted in 2012, and we are also trying to clarify some of the enforcement provisions of the current bylaw. Sudbury's had a bylaw regulating dogs since 1968. The purpose of the bylaw is shown in our general bylaws, and it is to guide persons owning or keeping dogs in their role as responsible pet owners so as not to adversely affect the residents of the town, and it is essentially a public safety bylaw. The totality of the regulations in Sudbury cover issues such as kennel licensing, vaccination and license requirements for personal pets, what to do with dangerous or nuisance dogs, the responsibilities of the animal control officer, responsibility for dog waste, and enforcement mechanisms. And since 1999, there have been no changes to the Sudbury bylaws other than to change the fees associated with some of the licensing requirements. The proposed changes to the bylaw this year, while in the warrant, look very significant, really are not. 12 out of the 18 sections shown in the warrant reflect changes for consistency with the state law and range from revised definitions to a change in the name of the animal control officer throughout the bylaw. Most of the revised provisions do not materially change the intent of the current bylaw nor its administration. I will bring up one provision, which I believe is material, which is to increase the number of dogs that a resident may keep as pets on their property without a kennel license. In the current bylaw, a kennel license is required when keeping four or more dogs, either as personal dogs or for commercial purposes. And this revision, which was reflected in the state law and changes to the state law in 2012, now differentiates between personal kennels and commercial kennels. A personal kennel will now be defined as a collection of more than four dogs. This means that residents who own up to four dogs can do so without obtaining a kennel license. Five or more dogs, even for personal use, requires a kennel license. This revision also requires all commercial kennels to obtain licenses regardless of the number of dogs. And these provisions are consistent, again, with changes that were adopted by the state in the 2012 amendments. I will also call your attention to Section 316 of the bylaw on page 26 of the warrant, which changes the definition of a vicious or dangerous dog, and this definition is one that was adopted by the state. For the most part, the remaining sections that are proposed for changes that are outside the law, those that we seek to clarify enforcement provisions, are sections 311, 312, 318, 323, and 324. Over the years, the most substantial discussions on this topic of dog regulations have centered on dog waste and the leash law. Neither of those provisions are proposed to be changed with this article. Dogs in Sudbury are still required to be either on a leash or under direct and complete control of the responsible person at all times, and there is no change to the pooper scooper requirements. The state law does allow towns to make additional ordinances or bylaws to the licensing and control of animals not inconsistent with the state laws. Sudbury has chosen to do so, and while this places the responsibility on the town to revise its bylaws when state laws change, it also gives us the opportunity to review those bylaws for updating and revision. Such is the premise of this article, and this article is supported by the selectman, the town clerk, and the animal control officer. Thank you.
Thanks, Jody. Before we start the discussion, is Jennifer Condon here tonight? Dog officer? I'm sorry, the animal control officer? She's not here? Okay. All right. Okay. Discussion regarding the motion under Article 36. Who wants to be heard? I'm sorry. Thank you. Finance Committee position on this article?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Thanks, Barbara. Okay. Discussion. Gentleman right here in the baseball cap. Wait for a mic, please.
Hello, John Danielson, 37 Landham Road. I'm against this article for a couple of reasons. One, the town hasn't presented any rationale for why it's beneficial to the town for us to conform our bylaw to the state bylaw. The argument is simply just let's conform, but there's no rationale for why conforming is beneficial to us. And in fact, if you read the article, which is quite long, I don't think it is beneficial to change this bylaw. If you are a resident that has a nuisance dog or a vicious dog in your neighborhood, under the new language, you have much weaker protections. The definition of a nuisance dog and a vicious dog is much weaker in the state bylaw, which is being proposed to be adopted, than in the current language. So absent any rationale for changing the language and strong rationale for leaving what we have, please vote against this article. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else wants to be heard? Would anyone else like to be heard on this motion? The person in the fuchsia shirt. Is that fuchsia?
Turquoise.
It's on. Marie Royer, 42 Blacksmith Drive. As long as we're talking about dogs. And I apologize because I can't find it in the 8 pages of these revisions. But I would really appreciate it if there were some way to include in whichever bylaw, whether we make any change or whatever, if people who are walking their dogs would actually take the bag of dog, stuff with them. Just saying. I'd like that to be like written into a bylaw, because we end up with several calling cards on a regular basis. And it's a health issue as well as, not exactly enhancing the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? No? Mr. Tyler.
I'd just like to point out that in the proposed revisions, section title 3-4 is still titled Dog Animal Control Officer. And is that an error? Is that supposed to be crossed off? Or is it going to be continued to be Dog Animal Control Officer?
Jody, do you have an answer to that? You are correct. Not now. Sorry, this woman right here next to the man in the orange shirt.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. I have a question which I suspect is for town council. Is there not merit and something along the lines of necessity of us getting our bylaws in compliance with state law?
You want to answer that?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The reason that we're proposing to conform your bylaws to state law is that state law supersedes town bylaws. It takes precedence. So right now, if someone were to make a complaint to the Board of Selectmen regarding a vicious dog or a dangerous dog, we would need to look to the state statutes, which have now superseded your bylaw. So the reason you want to conform your bylaw is because it's obviously confusing for someone to be reading this bylaw and thinking, oh, so this is what a vicious dog is or a dangerous dog is, when in fact, under state law, your bylaw has now been superseded. So you want your bylaw to be consistent with the state law so that somebody reading this will know what is expected of them and not have something that conflicts with state law and then find out that, in fact, you can't enforce it. So, there was a major rewrite of the dog statutes in 2012, and all, as Ms. Kablak mentioned, 90% of this is simply updating this bylaw to make it conform to state law so that you'll be in compliance and so that you won't have this conflict between the two, and it will be clear to everyone reading the bylaw what's expected of them.
Okay. Anybody else? Gentleman right here.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road. So just a follow-on question, maybe we'll direct to town council. So does that mean all of our wetlands bylaws don't matter if the state, they're all superseded by the state?
Is that your question?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Barbara?
As an example, maybe I should...
I thought you were finished. Please, continue.
No, that's what I meant. As an example...
Okay.
Yes, my original question was...
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Under state law, there's a specific provision that allows a town to adopt wetlands, local wetlands bylaws that are stricter than the state standards or different than the state standards, as long as they don't conflict.
The question's been called. I'll take one more. You're all set? Okay. Anybody else? All right. Here we go. The question, we're going to proceed to a vote. Majority vote is required. All in favor of the motion under Article 36, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. We're on to Article 37, disposition of the existing police station, 415 Boston Post Road. Selectman Len Simon for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to transfer to the Board of Selectmen for the purpose of conveying or leasing and authorize the Board of Selectmen to convey or lease the parcel of town land and building thereon at 415 Boston Post Road, currently used as a police station, on the terms and conditions established by the Board of Selectmen, said real estate disposition to be made in compliance with General Laws Chapter 30B to the extent applicable, to authorize the Board of Selectmen and other town officials to take all actions to carry out the article, providing that proceeds from any sale of the police station shall be set aside in a sale of real estate receipts reserved for appropriation account in accordance with the provisions of general laws, Chapter 44, Section 63, and further providing that any expenditure of said proceeds will be subject to appropriation at a future town meeting.
Does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by Mr. Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Len Simon, Board of Selectmen. Article 37 requests that the town meeting voters vote to authorize Board of Selectmen to make the final decision on the fate of this existing police station at 415 Boston Post Road and to implement that decision by following procurement laws without the need for another town meeting vote. The article also directs that the proceeds from any sale of the property go into an account which will require a future town meeting vote before any expenditure from that are authorized. The motion differs from the warrant article in that the motion includes the language regarding the setting aside of funds in a receipts reserved for appropriation account. Massachusetts General Laws Chapter 40, Section 15A requires a town meeting vote to dispose of public property. An affirmative vote under this article would allow the selectmen to begin this process and negotiate the terms of any sale or lease without having to bring the final decision back to a future town meeting. The board would engage in a public process, including public hearings and substantial discussion, before any decision is made. The survey on this question, which was recently on the town's website, is one way of receiving input from residents, and there will be more opportunities as well. An affirmative vote at this time is favored for several reasons. One, going into negotiations with any party prior to having the town meeting vote introduces significant risks which could impact the value of the property. Months could be spent negotiating only to have town meeting deny an action. This would put the town in an unfavorable position. The Board of Selectmen meeting is a more conducive setting to engage the public rather than town meeting. The selectmen can hold multiple hearings over the course of several months in order to arrive at the most appropriate use of the property and its disposition. The annual town meeting cycle is not conducive to a real estate transaction of this magnitude. A willing buyer or lessor may not be willing to wait if a deal is reached months prior to town meeting. The selectmen are committed to a full public process beginning this summer in order to find the best use of this site. The results of the first survey taken by 175 residents between March and April 21, 2015, indicate 38% of the respondents have a strong preference for selling the property for commercial use. However, 61% of the respondents think the town should retain ownership of the property. Retain ownership of the property and either lease it, keep it for open space, or wait for a municipal use to be identified. The selectmen need to study the issue more. This type of study and interaction with residents would not be typical of town meeting debate. This slide shows the percentage of respondents to the survey who felt the town should sell to a private buyer for commercial use, a little more than 38%. The town should lease the building for commercial use and retain ownership, 20%. The town should demolish the building and wait for a new municipal use to be identified, 18%. The town should demolish the building and create open space, 14%. The town should close the building and wait for a new municipal use to be identified, 9.5%. Town meeting would get back involved if a sale is consummated and would determine where to appropriate the funds. Mass General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 63, governs where such funds can be spent. A logical use for the funds would be to offset the principal of the bond on the new police station. The funds can also be used for any purpose for which the town is authorized to incur debt for a period of 5 years or more. The issue of how to spend the funds will be fully debated at town meeting at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you. Finance Committee, Mark Manasian.
Finance Committee supports this article.
Board of Selectmen, Pat Brown.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 37? Mr. Coe.
Mr. Moderator, I emphatically oppose this article. It's a solution in search of a problem. And all of the arguments that have been advanced so far seem to me to be arguments in favor of putting whatever decision is made in front of the town meeting. If we have a considerable disagreement over how the property should be used, why do we turn this decision over to the selectmen instead of having a proposal brought to the town meeting by the selectmen? And the idea that the annual town meeting is a bad time to do it, you can always have a special town meeting for something this important. And I would call the hall's attention to the fact that some number of years ago, I forget just how many, the Board of Selectmen at the time almost gave away the Loring School. And I think that, you know, I have no, I'm not trying to be hard on the current Board of Selectmen. I think that they would do what they thought was in the best interest of the town, but I don't think this is a decision that should be turned over to the selectmen in advance.
Thank you. Who else wishes to be heard? Mr. Tyler.
Mr. Moderator, I have a question.
Wait a minute. Get your mic. Identify yourself.
Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane.
Mr. Moderator, I have a question. I was going to amend the motion. I have it on a slide, but I forgot. My mind doesn't work quite right all the time. To print 3 copies so I can show you my amendment. But if it's not, then I just will make a presentation without the amendment.
Very good. Just for the benefit of the hall, and I'm not sure if you were here last night, but the rules of amendment require 3 copies in writing prior to the motion being made, and that's a strict rule. So
yeah.
Happy to entertain your presentation.
Right. Yeah. So page 2.
You have 5 minutes, Ralph.
Yeah, it's going to take about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Just take the second slide there, next one. We don't know what the land needs are going to be in the future. Maybe, just maybe,
We don't know what they're going to, that we're not going to need it in the next 5 years, but we may not even be sure about that. But what about 25, 50, or 100 years? So Boston Post Road is probably going to be there. The town of Sudbury is probably going to be here. And to amplify Mr. Coe's point on the next slide, we sold the Horse Pond School when enrollments post the baby boom from World War II. You know, we closed a bunch of schools. Then when we had the second baby boom, the post-war baby boom, whatever it was, the next one, then we didn't have Horse Pond School. That is a facility that we might be using now, the land for centrally located recreation fields for, you know, the organized sports that need fields. But we're land bound. We don't have those kinds of fields. But we made that decision before. And as Mr. Coe said, the Loring School, then closed, was leased for a number of years. And it was only the action of citizens who basically found out that the selectmen were not in a position to move on an article at a town meeting because they didn't actually hadn't made the transfer from the school to some other entity that prevented the sale of Loring School. And then the argument was made, well, then we probably should save it because we don't know what the future will bring. And so what did we do? We tore down Loring School, and then we built a new school. And so that's a vibrant part of South Sudbury neighborhood and a vibrant asset to Sudbury. So we lose all that with this article, which gives the power to sell. So my amendment, which I can't make, so I'm urging you to defeat it, is simply lease it or mothball it or tear it down, but don't sell it because we don't know what the future is going to bring. And if once gone, it's going to be very hard to get another parcel on Boston Post Road if we should need it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. Who else would like to be heard under Article 37? I'd like to get some new folks, if possible. Gentleman right here.
Richard Lawrence, 6 Partridge Lane. I'd just like to make a point that I think you're comparing an elephant to a mouse when you're talking about a Loring School property, as far as the acreage of the property compared to the footprint of the police station. You probably, I'm guessing, at least a 10-to-1 ratio on land size. So I don't think it's a valid argument as far as, well, that's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a gentleman right behind you. If you could hand him the microphone. Gentleman right, can you stand up? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Timothy Coyne, 24 Taylor Road. I ask a question to you. In this particular transaction, are we limiting the selectmen only to 415 Boston Post Road?
Mr. Simon?
Yes, limiting the property to 415 Post Road to be sold or leased.
So we're not empowering the selectmen to have a general power of sale without town meeting approval. Is that right, sir?
That's correct. That's correct.
In that case, I would urge passage of this article. Thank you.
Okay. Who else? Right here in the front row. Can you step up to this mic, please? Thanks.
James Hill, 199 Concord Road. The one thing that hasn't been mentioned is what possible value this property has as far as in dollars and what benefit that would be to the town to receive that money today versus in 5 years or 10 years when the property would be worth more money.
Mr. Simon, do you understand the question?
I'm not sure it's entirely clear.
Can you restate it, Mr. Hill?
Yes. What financial value does the selectmen believe this property to be worth today?
I don't believe there's been an appraisal of the property
current appraisal of the property. So the selectmen have no indication of what this value is, but they want to go ahead and sell it.
I think that's what he just said. Okay, other questions? Right here.
If I may, if there
no. This gentleman has the floor, Mr. Simon. It's on.
Thank you. Sorry. And I'm learning the rules, Mr. Moderator. Thank you. Quick question. I think that perhaps this transaction is a little bit premature because we also have, for example, the Raytheon buildings that are going to be coming. Something's going to happen there in the not too distant future, as I understand it. So I think let's give this another year. I would urge the town to consider postponing this.
I'm sorry. Can you identify yourself and your address again, please?
Sorry. Yes. Tim Hankins, 33 French Road.
Thanks. Who else would like to be heard on this article? No one? Okay, let's move to a vote. This requires a two-thirds vote majority to pass it. All in favor, signify by raising your cards. All opposed? Motion fails. Okay. Pat, you ready? Okay. Article 38, amendments to the Regional School District Agreement of the Minuteman Regional Vocational School District. Motion, Pat Brown, Board of Selectmen for a motion.
Move to indefinitely postpone this article.
Okay, is there a second? Presentation by Ms. Brown.
Can I have those slides on this, please? So I'd like to begin here by acknowledging the work of the Vocational Education Options Committee and to start with their recommendation in January 2015 to adopt what I will call the 2014 amended regional agreement. The move to indefinitely postpone this article appears to fly in the face of their recommendations, and I'd like to explain briefly why the Board of Selectmen is proposing it. Great. In four words, the situation has changed. Can I have the next slide, please? There are significant problems with the Minuteman School building. There was an article in last Sunday's Boston Globe West discussing the building issues at Minuteman and some of the problems, making progress towards addressing them. There is absolutely no question the building needs work. The presentation by the Minuteman Building Committee is posted on the town website on the VEOC webpage, and I encourage you to take a look. But the take home here is that the Minuteman School Committee is working toward a deadline of having a project approved by all 16 towns in the district by the summer of 2016 to take advantage of a Massachusetts School Building Authority, MSBA, grant to defray some of the cost. The Minuteman Regional District has been struggling with amending its current regional agreement, the agreement that governs the relationship between the 16 member towns, which was last amended in 1980, for years. The last iteration of this attempt to amend is the 2014 amended regional agreement. This was presented to the town of Sudbury for the 2014 annual town meeting and was indefinitely postponed that time. Could I have the next slide? Sudbury was asked by the Minuteman School Committee again to adopt that agreement in this article in 2015. You can read some of the provisions of the 2014 amended regional agreement in the Board of Selectmen report for Article 40, not Article 38, Article 40 in your warrant. The reason that this amended regional agreement is so important and so contentious is that it modifies the apportionment of power and capital costs among the 16 member towns. Some towns have calculated that the costs to build a new school are just too expensive to them under the existing agreement. So the amended agreement changes the apportionment of costs among member towns so that smaller towns, particularly those with enrollments of 10 students or less, bear a higher share of those costs. And many of the smaller towns
predicate their approval of any agreement with the requirement that they have an easier path to withdraw from the district than they do under the current agreement. The current agreement requires that every one of the 16 towns vote to approve. In order to adopt the 2014 amendment, all 16 towns must approve it at their town meeting. In 2015, this year, the town of Lincoln passed over the amended regional agreement, which is the way most people in the world would describe the indefinite postponement or IP process. The town of Wayland had already voted in 2014 to reject it entirely, and they did not bring it up again. So the possibility of having 16 towns approve this amendment in 2015 town meeting season is zero. The Minuteman School Committee, the Minuteman Building Committee, the Minuteman Administration are now laser-focused on gaining approval of the proposed building by all 16 member towns prior to the summer of 2016. They have stated they are no longer pursuing the adoption of the amended regional agreement. The 2014 regional agreement is, to quote Superintendent Bukulon in the Carlisle Mosquito, absolutely dead. Fourth slide, please. Therefore, there's no reason to debate or adopt the 2014 amended regional agreement, and we urge indefinite postponement. Thank you.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee recommends indefinite postponement of this article.
Board of Selectmen.
Yes, I'm sorry. The board recommends indefinite postponement.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion to indefinitely postpone? Anyone wish to be heard on this? I see no one. This requires a majority vote to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? It passes unanimously. Okay. Before we adjourn, give me a minute. I want to read something to the hall regarding FinCom and the appointments that I'm going to make as moderator. According to Article 4, Section 1 of the town's bylaws, it is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the Finance Committee before the end of annual town meeting. This year, the terms of Susan Berry, Joan Carlton, and William Nealand are expiring. I have consulted with the members of the Finance Committee and learned that Ms. Berry and Ms. Carlton are willing to continue to serve. Accordingly, I have informed the town manager by letter today that I have reappointed Ms. Berry and Ms. Carlton to new three-year terms. As for Mr. Nealon, who has served the committee so competently and so well, I offer on behalf of the town our gratitude for the time and care you have given to the work of the Finance Committee and our sincere congratulations on a job well done. Thanks, Bill. In order to fill the seat vacated by Mr. Nealand, I solicited applicants by posting on the town's website, in the town crier, and on a local Facebook group called One Sudbury. I received resumes from three highly qualified candidates and interviewed each of them over the last several days. I also solicited input on the suggestion of the candidates from present and former members of the FinCom and the Board of Selectmen. The selection decision was very difficult, but I'm convinced that the person chosen is highly qualified and capable of making an immediate contribution to the work of the FinCom. Accordingly, I have informed the town manager by letter today of the appointment of Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road, to a three-year term on the Finance Committee. I'll take a motion to adjourn until tomorrow night. So moved. Okay. Does that receive a second? All right. All in favor of adjourning till tomorrow at 7:30, same place. All opposed? See you tomorrow.